At the World Dairy Expo in Madison last Thursday, two cow pie plaques were awarded to two entities that our guest says are pushing policies to expand factory farming in Wisconsin and other states. And we will find out why the Family Farm Defenders wants to stop taxpayer-funded factory farm expansion in Wisconsin. And we will welcome your questions and views, too. Good morning. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It is 8 minutes past 6 o'clock on this Monday, October the 10th. Is there anything wrong with larger corporate farms, factory farms, in Wisconsin? There's a proposal to allow another one near Coloma, Wisconsin, and we have had listeners request that we talk about it, so we will this hour. And we will welcome your questions and experiences, too, at 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Our guest is Sarah Lloyd, dairy farmer near Wisconsin Dells and a member of Family Farm Defenders. Good morning.
Hello.
Thanks a lot for being with us. Is this? Are we keeping you away from the morning chores?
Well, no. My husband gets to do a lot of the morning stuff, and then I actually work off-farm, as many farm spouses do, so I'm getting ready for my day with a computer, more likely, but I do help around the edges, certainly.
Yeah.
And
well, we're happy that you were able to take time to talk with us about it. We were prompted to talk about this because we read about the Family Farm Defenders presenting its second annual Wisconsin Land of 10,000 Lagoons Award last week at the World Dairy Expo. These awards went to entities that are lobbying or marketing groups that aren't even based in Wisconsin. Tell us why the ALEC and AFACT both received these awards.
Well, yes, Family Farm Defenders, you know, we're interested in maintaining vibrant rural communities and vibrant family farms. And we have an issue right now going on in Wisconsin that we see this trend towards fewer and fewer farms that are larger and larger. This is certainly not an inevitable thing to happen, but we see a lot of people talking about how, well, there's nothing we can do. We have to get big. And there's a lot of factors that are pressing that supposed inevitability. So we wanted to award two of the entities that work behind the scenes and in front of the scenes to really push this idea that we have to have these big farms. ALEC has kind of come into the spotlight, the American Legislative Exchange Council, which is a D.C.-based entity that sort of writes bills and shops them around to legislators and states and tries to get them into law. And so we saw some of that in the protests in Wisconsin, that there was concerns that these things that Walker and his cronies were trying to put in were being pushed by ALEC. And included in their bundle of bills is a right-to-farm bill, which they have shopped around to different states. And basically what it does is it takes away the ability for local communities and local municipalities to stop or put conditions on large-scale agricultural development. We've actually seen the livestock siting bill in Wisconsin that came 5-plus years ago that has really limited a rural community's ability to say no to large factory farms. So we wanted to call attention to this outsider sort of lobbying influence that's pushing things like factory farms and taking away local control. And then as far as AFACT, the American Farmers for the Advancement and Conservation of Technology, they are also a sort of so-called grassroots organization, although we have characterized them as an astroturf organization in the sense that they're backed by the big multinational corporations like Monsanto. And what they are trying to do is really push, for example, synthetic bovine growth hormone and also genetically modified organisms in agricultural products, and they don't want consumers to be able to know that those products are in their food. They want to stop labeling. They want to push for no regulations on GM crops and synthetic bovine growth hormone. So these two entities are, I'm not sure a lot of people know about them, and so we found this as a good opportunity to call attention to them and their impact mm-hmm. on the spread of concentrated large-scale agriculture in Wisconsin.
And you are, your group is encouraging citizens to speak out against taxpayer-subsidized factory farm expansion in Wisconsin. First of all, why is it taxpayer-subsidized?
Well, there are a lot of things going on that are assisting large-scale farms. For example, one particular program is called the Milk Volume Production Program, and it was started in Wisconsin several years ago. And they actually access community development block grants from the federal government and low-interest loans for in the name of job creation to help people buy more cows. Mm-hmm. And this is not, for the most part, this is not your 50-cow dairy buying 10 cows. This is your 500-cow dairy buying 300 more cows. Mm-hmm. So that's, they're accessing federal funds, and that's a program that's been run out of the Department of Commerce in connection with the Department of Agriculture for many years. I think we called attention to the Dane County Community Manure Digester, which, you know, certainly with appropriate technology, we support the use of, you know, manure digesters on an appropriate scale. But in this case, we saw in Dane County that they used these federal loans to allow a farmer to buy more cows to get bigger so that they could make this manure digester work. So that's really something that we just find problematic. The other thing is you often see that EQIP funds, which are federal funds, the Environmental Quality Improvement Program funds, are used for people to pour more concrete to build bigger manure lagoons. So we have a lot of federal money that comes in that, you know, looks nice on the outside. Oh, it's environmental quality improvement. Well, what is it allowing people to do? It's allowing people to build more concrete manure lagoons. Mm-hmm. We also have dairy modernization tax credits in this state that the state allows for tax credits to be taken by farmers for improvements on their farm. We don't have a problem with that general idea, but what they do is they keep expanding the size at which you can claim these tax credits. They moved it from 50,000 total to or 500,000 you could claim credit on to $750,000 in expenditure. So who's spending $750,000 in improvements on their farm? Those are large farms. Do we want to encourage that with our taxpayer dollars? And Family Farm Defender says no.
Well, why do you find this trend of fewer and fewer farms in Wisconsin and instead larger farms in Wisconsin? Why is this troubling? Why should this concern us?
Yeah, I mean, it's troubling on a number of levels, and I guess it's most easily to break it down into three. It's troubling on a social level, it's troubling on an economic level, and on an ecological level. Certainly from the ecological or environmental standpoint, it's troubling because there's terrible risk involved in the concentration of animals in one place. Now, you know, if I have 100 cows, yes, they produce 100 cows worth of manure. And, you know, we work with farms to make sure they have the land base to be able to spread that manure and use it as a resource to grow crops. When I have 8,000 or 9,000 cows in one spot, yes, we work with those farmers to make sure, and we actually require that they are able to spread that. But if there is a problem with their manure lagoon, which we've seen time and time again in some of these large farms, that's potentially catastrophic. If a problem happens, it's catastrophic. And that, so the environmental risk is just too great. It's too great to our groundwater and our surface waters. So that's an issue. But one thing that we don't often talk about is what is the impact on our rural communities or the social impact of these farms. We have amazing rural communities in Wisconsin, and we all know that they are struggling. And what we see is these large farms come in, and they're not buying locally for the most part. They're even going past their normal supply co-ops and buying, you know, in huge quantities outside of the area, and that impacts the local businesses. But it also, you know, who are the people that are in these farms? And when we think about kids going to schools and people going to churches and people just being generally involved in their communities, we're starting these factories in the middle of our rural landscapes. And socially, for communities, we don't think that that is a long-term strategy for having vibrant communities. And then just economically, I see, so my husband and I are dairy farming, and we milk 300 cows with his family. And, you know, we've seen our land rents, the land that we rent for our crops, that price that we have to pay every year is going up. And part of that is we're seeing a lot of land competition now in Wisconsin. And when I talk to farmers around the state, I hear it, that bigger farms are coming in. They have more ability to bid up land rent prices. And that's really hard for farmers to compete with when they're smaller. So you have these larger farms out competing smaller farms for land, for example. And then you just have the impact of, you know, do we need as dairy farmers 5,000 more cows worth of milk put on our milk markets that are already struggling?
We are going to take a short pause, and then we will continue talking with Sarah Lloyd. She's a dairy farmer near Wisconsin Dells. She is a member of Family Farm Defenders. And she says we should be concerned about the environmental, economic, and social impacts of large-scale farms in Wisconsin. And we're welcoming your thoughts and questions at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. We will talk about a proposed large-scale factory farm that is planned for the Coloma area in just a moment. And we welcome your thoughts about that. There is a larger farm, a controversial larger farm near Rosendale that was recently approved. Maybe you have experiences with that. We welcome your input. It's going to be sunny today, too partly cloudy, with highs in the 70s, the 60s near Lake Michigan and Door County. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. We are talking about efforts to slow down factory farms in Wisconsin with a guest from the group Family Farm Defenders. And we welcome your questions and views about this issue. Tomorrow at this time, tomorrow will be the first day of our half-the-time pledge drive. We have cut our fall pledge drive in half, 6 days rather than the typical 12, but we still need to raise 12 days' worth of listener support. You can help us get a head start on that by pledging now online at WPR.org. Pretty sure there's a list of thank you gifts that are available online, so you can choose your gift ahead of time, too, if you pledge ahead of time. Tomorrow, we are going to be talking about our health with family physician Zorba Pastor, and we will have for you a collector's item of sorts for a pledge of any amount tomorrow morning between 6 and 7, our last remaining copies of Zorba's popular cookbook, Heart Healthy Recipes from the Kitchen of Zorba Pastor. That's tomorrow from 6 until 7, hour one of day one of our half the time pledge drive. We hope you will be with us for that. We will get to the phones in just a moment for Sarah Lloyd, our guest. She is a dairy farmer near Wisconsin Dells and a member of Family Farm Defenders. But, and our lines are full, by the way, Sarah. I wanted to ask you, since this has been a listener suggestion for a program for some time now, what is this large-scale farm proposed near Coloma all about, and why are you concerned about it?
Yeah, so the It's called the Richfield Dairy, and it's a 5,000-cow operation that's being proposed by the Milk Source Company, which is a group of farmers from Wisconsin that are getting up towards 20,000-plus cows, if you count up all the cows they have on a couple different farms. And the one in Coloma that's being proposed is actually the second 5,000-cow dairy up in this Adams County and Coloma area. And it's concerning for all the reasons that I listed before that, you know, there's great ecological risk in concentrating that amount of animals. Is especially concerning up in that central sands area, which is where this is. You're getting into the sands. There's concerns about what's going to happen with the manure that's spread on that sandy soil. I have talked to some soil scientists that have some concerns about how quickly the nitrates will go through that soil and potentially get down to the groundwater. We already have trouble with our groundwater resources in Wisconsin, and not to mention even just the large use of water in that area. There's a really a large concentration of high-capacity wells in that area. You know, can we use more than that? But so we have the ecological concerns, but certainly, again, it's just another push towards large scale that's going to impact the economics of other farmers and also the social impacts that has on communities by bringing in these large factories that aren't participating in the community the way that, for example, 50, 100 cow dairies would.
Jane on Facebook has a different perspective. She writes, the dairy industry can't be expected to stay in the 19th century. There are too many mouths to feed in this world and not enough people willing to put in the long hours in this day and age. Your response to that?
Well, I think that it's often easy for people to say, well, people that are against factory farms are somehow anti-technology or have some romantic notion of farming, and it's far from it. You know, I think in some ways this is a real just like logistical issue. We produced 25 billion pounds of milk in Wisconsin last year, and if you figure that the average cow produces about 20,000 pounds of milk a year, then we need 1,250,000 cows. And we can arrange those 1,250,000 cows to produce that 25 billion pounds of milk. We can do that with 12,500 100 cow dairies, so 12,500 farms that have an average of 100 cows, or we can do that with 250 farms that have an average of 5,000 cows. And there's a fundamental difference for rural communities and for our agricultural economy between those two scenarios. And so what family farm defenders and others are asking for is let's have this conversation. Yes, farmers can use appropriate technologies, technologies that are accepted by the larger community, but we need to have this conversation because going down the road of 250 farms of 5,000 cows, and that's it for the dairy industry, that's a scary scenario for Wisconsin. That's our big concern.
Mm-hmm. We have many callers, as I say, and a short time before news, but we can get Edie in Ferryville on. Hi, Edie.
Hi. Thanks for having this program on.
Thanks for calling. What's your question or concern?
Well, I wanted to make one point here. First of all, that Sarah speaks well for the family farm and has been doing this statewide. She's going to be a panelist on an event in November 11th and 12th, the Wisconsin Forum on Rural and Urban Agriculture, and it's held in Madison. And if folks are interested, this is largely for folks who have concern, the very concern that Sarah just spoke to, the large versus the let rural communities decide what they want, and presently we don't get to. The laws are such that if a factory farm comes to your area, it's very hard to say, no, we don't want that. What we want is farmers, more farmers on the land, and we want animals on the land. So we're doing this. There's this forum, and there's four sessions, and Sarah's in one of those, and I want to just give a plug for that. And if you go to sustainruralwisconsin.net, you can get more information and you can register.
Thanks very much for the call, Edie. And you're not going to argue with Edie, Sarah?
No.
What about, is it your hope that somehow this livestock siting legislation that is on the books already in Wisconsin gets overturned, or what do you hope to achieve?
Well, I think that's one thing that we definitely need to talk about, because the livestock siting bill that got passed, I think 5 years ago, has been a real blow to local control over these issues, because it specifically took away the ability for rural communities to say either no or set conditions. We see right now there's a case that went all the way to the Supreme Court in Wisconsin that still hasn't been settled of, you know, can a local community, the town of Magnolia in that case, put extra conditions on a factory farm to protect its groundwater? And so far, the courts have been saying no, and that's what people were told all along. The livestock siting bill will not take away local control, but it certainly has, and that's a really bad situation for Wisconsin communities.
Sarah Lloyd is our guest, a dairy farmer near Wisconsin Dells, a member of Family Farm Defenders. It's a group that is a family farm advocacy group, and speaking out against factory farms or large corporate farms. And we're welcoming your questions and your concerns at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or contact us on Twitter at Joy Cardine Show. We will check news from NPR and Wisconsin Public Radio, and then we'll take many more of your calls. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We are talking with a guest from a family farm advocacy group who is upset with policies that help the much larger enterprises, often called factory farms or corporate farms, to expand in the state, and also with the groups that are pushing these policies. We are also talking with her about a proposed large-scale farming operation near Coloma, Wisconsin, a 5,000 cow operation, a topic that was suggested by more than one listener over the past few weeks. And we are welcoming your thoughts and questions at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show, the Facebook page. And it is now coming up on 6:37 on this Monday, October the 10th. Our guest is Sarah Lloyd, a dairy farmer near Wisconsin Dells and a member of Family Farm Defenders. And back to the phones, Kevin in Madison is our next caller. Hello, Kevin.
Good morning, Joy, and thank you for taking my call. It's a very interesting topic today. I would like to say, without a doubt, that the big factory farms is certainly the wave of the future and the way for Wisconsin to go. What we have here is a small family farm owner basically spreading fear-mongering, and I'd like to elaborate that on a little bit. A few of her own points that she made about big factory farms coming in and driving up the price of real estate. Is that a bad thing? Is that really a bad thing for Wisconsin to make our real estate worth more money? I don't think so. Another point I'd like to make is that how much more easy is it to manage 200 to 250 farms with the infrastructure to make sure that things are clean and the infrastructure it takes to get food and grain in and out, transport these animals, manage these manure pools that she's so concerned about. You know, I'd rather have 200 to 225 of those being watched and 10,000 around the state.
All right, let's see. Let's get a response to that. It's easier to monitor a fewer big farms for this potential pollution, Sarah Lloyd.
Well, I don't agree in the sense that, as I said before, I just think the risk, the catastrophic risk, if there's a failure in the manure lagoons or any part of the system, is just hundreds of times greater with a 5,000 cow dairy versus a 50 cow dairy. So to me, it's not acceptable. I don't think that we should operate with that risk. And I also think he said, you know, the large scale farms are the wave of the future. Well, you know, we have a really great story to tell here in Wisconsin. We still have over 12,000 dairy farms, and they're fundamentally important for the vibrancy of our rural communities. And that's not something I'm willing to give up for the so-called convenience of monitoring a couple big, risky farms.
What's the definition of a family farm versus a corporate farm?
Well, you know, I think that's, we should move away to some extent from some of those terms because they get easily co-opted. You know, this milk source, they own Omro Dairy, Rosendale Dairy, Tidy View Dairy. They're proposing the Newchester and the Richfield Dairy. Well, you know, you could say this is a group of families. As my father-in-law likes to say, you know, the big robber barons of earlier time in U.S. history also had families. You know, Rockefeller had a family, too. But that's not the point. The point is that we're seeing concentration in the dairy industry that we haven't seen before. We've had a very well-distributed economic and ecological and social system of, you know, tens of thousands of farms spread out over the landscape, and that's good for the health of the land, and it's good for our rural communities, and that is being jeopardized right now. We're at a crossroads in Wisconsin, and we need to take the path of maintaining the distribution and diversity of farms, and we can do that because we've got a really good story to tell. We've got great dairy products that people want to buy. They seek out Wisconsin cheese, but if you look at the Wisconsin cheese label that's on the cheeses, it's not a manure lagoon in the picture. It's a little red barn, and it's not a 40-pound block of commodity cheese being upheld by the arm in the logo. It's a slice of specialty cheese, and that's where we need to be maintaining.
Kevin, I'll give you an opportunity for a follow-up. Well, I guess he's listening on the radio now, so we'll have to move on and go to Matt in Liberty Pole. Hello, Matt.
Hi. I guess I'm convinced that if most consumers knew the environmental and social costs of these California-style factory farms, they wouldn't want to buy these products. My family, we try to buy organic as much as possible, but I'd also like to be able to support conventional family-scale farms like my grandparents had. And I'm just wondering if there's any way to a consumer can find out if the milk that's going into the dairy products they're buying are coming from huge factory farms that are producing milk like Milk Source. Has there ever been any talk of a boycott of products from factory farms?
Sarah Lloyd?
Yeah, that's a great question. You know, currently we don't have like a CAFO-free label, which, you know, maybe that's something that we need to talk about because I do agree that as consumers we're seeing growing awareness of consumers about where their food comes from. And so this could be a mechanism to tell people what's going on. Right now, you know, I think I encourage people to look carefully at their dairy products. We have a lot of processing in Wisconsin, dairy processing. We have a lot of, you know, small-scale processing in co-op, so people should get to know the source of their, you know, the cheese factories, the different co-ops, and start asking questions. When you go into the grocery store, find the guy that runs the dairy department and say, can you tell me if any of these products, is this cottage cheese, is it CAFO-free or factory farm-free? I think that's a really good thing that consumers should start to be asking because right now there isn't a mechanism right now in any kind of labeling that would give us that.
Our next caller is Forrest in Menominee. Hello, you're on the air.
Good morning. I just have a couple of questions here, and I'll take the answers off the air. My first point is when we talk about local control, just an observation, it seems like we talk about states' rights and state control until it comes to big business, and then there should be no local control. That's just an observation. I'll let you comment on that. The other thing is the impact of a corporate farm versus a local farm on those communities. Typically what I've seen is when you have a corporation or some very large economic concern, those profits do not stay in that local community. So if the guest could comment on that. And the final point I have is, if you can talk about programs, incentives that are really meant to foster farming and agriculture, and when we see those large businesses come in and take advantage of programs that were really meant for the small farmer, and just what the guest comments would be around that. So I'll take my answer off the air.
All right. Thanks very much. I'll try to remember all those. But when it comes to the policies that were meant to foster farming and help the smaller farmer, are those the policies that you talked about in the first half hour that that bigger farms are taking advantage of?
Yeah, I think, you know, we can look just right to the state dairy modernization tax credit. I mean, you know, yes, like all size farms can use that, but they keep upping the maximum amount that people can claim, and then, you know, it goes more towards the big farms that can afford to spend $750,000 and take a tax credit for that. So that's the concern that we have as far as how that's enabling the large-scale farms, the
yeah.
factory farms.
So you would like to see perhaps some sort of limitations placed on those policies?
Yeah, why not take it back down? It was at $500,000 or even, you know, take it lower, because who has all this money to spend? And I think the caller's next point was the issue of, well, you know, kind of how does the money that's generated at a family farm versus a large-scale factory farm, how does that get cycled or not cycled back into the local community? And I think that that is definitely a big issue. I know at the Richfield Dairy, the one that is being proposed near Coloma, there was some at the DNR hearing, they were talking, I can't remember the number, but, you know, these are like $35, $40 million farms. Like, that's how much it costs to build that size farm. Well, the question is, who's holding that cash? Like, what, is it a bank? Is it, are these, you know, who's holding the money? And I think the concern that Family Farm Defenders has is that we're seeing this huge capitalization of farms in Wisconsin. And how, who's holding that money? And how does that really play out in the future? Now, for example, the Rosendale Dairy, that's 8,000 cows at least. I think they're going bigger. What does that look like in the next generation? Like, yes, there are three or four main families that are involved in Milk Source and Rosendale, but what happens in the next generation? Can we expect the siblings to, you know, buy out the parents as we would expect someone to do with 100 cow dairy? It's not possible. So what happens next? Who comes in and owns those farms? And for me, it looks like it's going to be corporate money, because there's no way that people can, you know, buy out that capitalized cost.
Yeah. Isn't it true, or is it true, that the smaller family farm is declining in part because the kids are not taking up the business?
Yes, that's definitely an issue that we're seeing in farming in general and in dairy farming in Wisconsin. You know, but we do have some great incentive programs that we think are good. Mm-hmm. And those would be like the School for Beginning Dairy Farmers that's based out of the UW. It's part of the short course, and then I think it's done remotely. You can tune into it on different campuses across the state, and that really is trying to help small farmers gain entry, or small-scale farming gain entry in new farmers. And then I also have just heard of the Grassworks organization has a new program that is kind of a mentorship or a farm incubator project. So an existing farmer would set up a system where a young farmer could come in and be kind of mentored and incubated for a while as they get their feet on the ground, as they build up their own herd and some equity, and then that could be launched as like a new small farm with new farmers. And so, you know, there are ways that we can do this. I am constantly amazed by the way that this trend towards large-scale factory farms is just passed off as a given in this state.
Yeah. And our caller also wanted you to comment on local control, but that we've talked quite a bit about that with that livestock siting legislation that trumps local control on
this
issue.
Yeah, and that's really concerning. People should be very concerned about that.
Jamie in River Falls. Hello, Jamie.
Hi. Yeah. I just wanted to make a few comments. I think knowing some of, we have friends that are, their families own large, like 5,000 head or larger herd dairy farms. And the thing to remember is that they became a corporation or an LLC to protect themselves so that if they went under, that it wouldn't totally bankrupt their family itself, which is what most small businesses do, is become an LLC. and that most of the children that have come back to work these farms have gone to UW system four-year degree schools such as River Falls or Platteville to learn, you know, dairy management and some of those things like that. So, I mean, and they've done it simply to continue being able to support their family, and then that there's an investment in the family, and it's no different than any large a business that a family owns that, you know, it's like a corporation. They work towards it, and it doesn't have to mean that they always have to buy out their parents. But without everyone going to college and getting four-year degrees, there's no way that they could make it. And the overhead for having a farm and owning the equipment, I mean, a combine is over $300,000.
We get it, Jamie, and we're almost out of time. So, Sarah Lloyd, the big corporate factory farms are really family farms that are protecting themselves.
Well, certainly. I mean, there are families behind all these large farms. What we have concerns about is the concentration, the economic concentration that's going on, and the ecological risk that's being concentrated. And so that's the concern. I mean, yes, there are families involved, and we understand the way that people have been pushed towards this trajectory, because certainly the university and other places, that's what they're saying is the only way to go. And we're saying, no, we want to build a resilient, sustainable Wisconsin dairy industry, and we think we can do that by supporting a lot of small farms. We need more farmers, not fewer farmers.
And in conclusion, then, what's the next step, I guess, for family farm defenders and this effort that you are in?
Well, I encourage people to be very vigilant and get involved locally in these issues, but Family Farm Defenders will continue to call attention to the way in which the policy is kind of stacked toward in favor of the large farms. We encourage people to come to this forum that was mentioned November 11th and 12th in Madison. People can look at sustainruralwisconsin.net to get more information. John Eichard, who's a noted agricultural economist that talks about the triple bottom line, ecological, economic, and social health, and he will be speaking Friday night and also on Saturday. So, you know, I just encourage people to get involved. Become a food citizen. Pay very close attention to what you're buying and what it connects to in your community or what it doesn't connect to.
Thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you.
Sarah Lloyd, dairy farmer near Wisconsin Dells, a member of Family Farm Defenders. Coming up, it's our Monday morning wake-up call, and after 7 o'clock, it's our state capitol report. So stay with us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's time now for our Monday morning wake-up call, something that you may not have known, from a guest who says it's well worth knowing. And today's wake-up call deals with a bill that's in the state legislature that would change requirements for school nurses and non-nursing staff who administer medications to children. Our guest says the measure puts the health and safety of school children at risk. And we are happy to have with us Twyla Lotto, a school nurse in the Waukesha School District and former president of the Wisconsin Association of School Nurses. Good morning.
Good morning, Joy, and thank you for the opportunity to speak with the people of Wisconsin and your listeners about this issue.
Well, I'm very happy you could join us. Tell us what does this bill do that you are concerned about?
Well, this legislation is being proposed by Representative Steve Castell and Senator Luther Olson is Assembly Bill 62 and Senate Bill 45. And it is proposing that Act 160, which enjoyed bipartisan support in the legislature, be in essence rescinded. And it provided for anyone who gives medications to students in public schools to have training to in the safety interest of students. And it also required that a school nurse in the state of Wisconsin have a bachelor's degree in nursing.
Yeah. Well, so it would repeal the requirement that those who administer medications have some sort of training. This is like, you know, non-nursing staff, correct?
That is correct.
Yeah. So what kind of training is needed to administer medications to children? Is there, you know, why is this a concern to you?
Well, it's a concern because today in schools we have medications that are given that are inhaled, medications that are given rectally, medications that are injected, medications that are given into the eyes, the ears, through feeding tubes, and to even fathom that anyone could, without some sort of training, it's just not in the best interest of children and the safety of doing.
And as for right now, nurses need to have a bachelor's degree, and this would say that's no longer necessary?
That is true. And nurses who have bachelor's degrees have much more extensive coursework during their education, their four-year education, that covers, you know, family systems and epidemiology. All of those things are required in school nursing today because it is so complex, because kids are coming to school with more complex health conditions. And so it's just vital that the nurse have enough training to be able to manage those needs.
Well, what is your understanding as to why this legislation is there in the first place? Is this some sort of cost-saving measure?
I'm thinking that it is. I mean, I can't speak to the motivation behind this, but I think it might be to hire lesser-skilled staff and just would be detrimental to the health and safety of kids because, as I said, it's getting more and more complex in the schools. Now, the legislation does say that you have to have training if you're going to give medications that are inhaled, injected, or administered rectally, but the majority of medications that we give today in schools are given by mouth, and you don't need to have medication training for that. It also says that you don't have training for medications given by feeding tube or medications that are given into the eyes, the ears, or put on the skin.
Mm-hmm. Well, what is your hope then when it comes to this particular bill? Are you optimistic or not optimistic that it's going to make it through the state legislature?
Well, it could come up as soon as October 18th, and we're optimistic that we're hoping it won't pass. We're hoping that parents out there who have children who take medications or have complex health care needs will contact their legislators and ask them not to pass this Assembly Bill 62 and Senate Bill 45. We're hoping that people will realize that it could be detrimental to the health and safety of our kids.
Thank you very much for being with us and issuing this morning's wake-up call. We appreciate it.
Thank you, Joy. I appreciate it as well.
Twyla Lotto is a school nurse, and she is the president of the Wisconsin Association of School Nurses, concerned about this proposal that she says could lead to less qualified school nurses and less reliable care when our school kids are hurt or need medication. Thanks to Rob Ferret, to Bill Martins, and to Amanda Magnus for producing this hour, and thank you for listening. I hope you stay tuned. There's much more to come. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. And a reminder to join us tomorrow for day one of our fall pledge drive. Tomorrow morning at this time, we're going to be talking with Zorba Pastor on your health. This is the Ideas Network.